Hey everybody, welcome to Workforce Gaming. I am Brad, here with Doug.
Hey.
We have both finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
At least the story.
At least the main story.
Yeah.
Did the review of it. This is about 45 hours. Put about 10 hours into the side stuff afterwards just to get a feel for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Doug, I think, is like 90 hours in and like three side quests away from like basically 100% in this thing, right?
Pretty much, yeah. That's exactly where I'm at, yeah.
So, at this point, this is our spoiler discussion, spoiler cast, spoiler review, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Just walking through all of the game and just kind of our final thoughts on this game without worrying about having to dance around what happened here and the thing and actually being able to talk about it. So, from here on out, there are spoilers for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Remake, original Final Fantasy VII, just because you kind of got to get into that a little bit with a lot of this stuff. What we'll do, we'll talk through the main story, kind of the moments that stuck out to us, and then spend a little bit of time talking about some of the side stuff, and then where we think we will be in Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 3, pick a different word that starts with R, in 2029.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
So, let's go. Midgar. We pick up right there. The moment that Remake left, which I love the fact there's no time jump, there's no like, oh yeah, now we're just out in the wild. It's like, no, it just fell apart. And I love seeing how wrecked Midgar was to start this game.
The first person sort of I also like that they introduced like the two worlds concept pretty early on too, but I love that like the first person cameraman scene of just like going through the wreckage. I always think that the remake really excels when it like puts more like, how would people react in these situations? Like, okay, if there was like the Sector 7 plate just fell and now this highway got destroyed, like they shoot it like a disaster scene.
Yeah.
Like a disaster movie almost. And it's like a really impactful opening that I'm so glad they hid from the demo. And just, they totally skipped that over.
Yeah. They were really cagey and like, oh yeah, the demo is like, it's like the opening moments. It's not the opening moments, but it's the opening. It's like, no, it's like the opening moments with like some important context removed. So
yeah, exactly.
The fact that we start out as playable Zack, I think is one of those, like, this is a big deal for a lot of people, just because of who Zack is, where Zack came from, Zack in the original. And I think that was kind of the tease that's been like sitting in everybody's brain for like 4 years is like, well, what are we doing with Zack? Like, Zack shouldn't be here. Why is he here? And they're like, okay, that's what you want. That's what you get. Here's Zack. Go.
It was interesting they showed Zack in kind of a in like a very desperate situation, but it was interesting like with the Zack scenes as they went throughout the game. I think they did a really good job differentiating Zack from Cloud.
Yep.
Where they maybe could have not. And I really liked how he played totally different. He played like a little bit, he like Crisis Core light sort of thing. So it was like really interesting playing as him as a different personality, like different character. And I was just, I played a lot of Crisis Core. I didn't finish it, but I was like, I was kind of excited to see Zack back. I was like, it was nice having him kind of wrapped in this, 'cause he wasn't a huge part of the original games, at least as a fully fleshed out character.
I agree. It was nice having him back. We'll talk about why I don't like that later on. But the other thing that
for the opening, you liked it.
For the opening. I love the opening. The opening, fantastic. We'll talk more about Zack later on. But
how'd you feel about killing off Aerith right in the opening?
So that's the next thing, is that we instantly jump to Aerith is dead. Like, that is the moment that every person who has played Final Fantasy VII, that knows Final Fantasy VII, it's the moment you're waiting for. It's the moment you're going, like, we have to get to that part in this game. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, well, you're 7 minutes in. She's dead. Game over. Yes. Don't worry about it. Everything else is fine, but she's dead. She's dead. So I think it was just that really good call out to, again, kind of Remake did this a lot, where it's like, you're expecting this, and it's just that instant thing of like, oh, no. We're still going to be messing with you. Like, don't expect what you think. We're going to be messing you from the start. Aerith is dead at the beginning of this, not when you're expecting it to come towards the end.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's really cool. And I love the subtleness with the white materia falling out of her and doing like the bounce, because that is the signal to people who have played the game that Aerith's dead, and anybody else who saw it's like, oh, what's wrong with Aerith? And like, I love that like signaling to people. But it was interesting because basically after that part, it kind of like, the Zack stuff is not as important. I was like, there's very little of it throughout the game until like maybe the very, very end. I was surprised it wasn't a bigger part given the opening.
Yeah, and we'll get into it a little bit more when we kind of dive into Zack. But that's kind of part of my issue, is that I feel like it was kind of half baked almost to a certain extent. But
that's fair.
We'll get to that as it comes up throughout the game here. So from there, we kind of get some moments of team bonding, if you will, as we go through the grasslands and calm and those things. One of the things that I love that this game kind of starts out with a little bit, and I don't remember exactly where it fits into the grasslands area, but Cloud and Tifa spend a lot of time trying to be like, well, let's just sit down and talk. Let's talk this out. Let's hash this out. And trying to figure out their history together, because both are kind of have, you know, some memory things. And Tifa at this point just calls out Cloud to, I think it's Aerith she's talking to, who's like,
yes,
he's lying. None of this happened. He was not there. Yeah. What the hell?
Yes. And I like that. And Sephiroth shows up immediately to tell Cloud that you saw me kill Tifa. Cloud is distrustful of it. Tifa's distrustful of it. It was really interesting. I think Sephiroth was so convincing to me that I was like, he really did stab Tifa pretty. And like, Sephiroth one shots a lot of people in this game. So it's like, it's not like unheard of. So I was like, oh, am I being messed with? Like, is this the actual Tifa? Which I think is like exactly what they wanted. I think the one thing that was kind of interesting, maybe I didn't realize in the original game, is that Tifa and Cloud weren't really friends in Nibelheim. So it was interesting them already kind of just being acquaintances. Like they sort of knew each other. There was like there's that sweet scene with them like as older kids. But like when they talk throughout the game, it's like they knew each other. They're not as close as I thought.
It's like the kid down the road from you. It's like, yes, I know a lot of things about that kid down the road, but I don't know what his favorite things are, but he had a cool swing set, and occasionally we'd ride bikes together.
Exactly. And so it was cool, like showing that kind of like separation. It's like, no, it's like their childhood is not the thing that's like totally bonding them together, because they're already diverging like immediately. I really did love those scenes. I also think real quick on the calm stuff I thought was cool was they start hinting at sort of the sickness that the soldiers have because of the innkeeper. I was like, oh, I kind of forgot about this whole sickness thing. And that was just kind of an introduction to like, you know, you die, not die, but you kind of have some sort of brain rot thing in Cloud. It's coming for you.
Yeah.
It's like setting it off like right at the beginning was like really cool.
Yeah. Calm itself, I feel like, was kind of just this like, I don't know, it was a good start to the game where you're just kind of teasing a lot of things. And you have the moment where Shinra comes back in, and I feel like it kind of restates the fact that like, you may have like messed Midgar up, but Shinra is bigger than Midgar. And it kind of takes that like... Because I think if you didn't have the full picture of Seven, I think you could see Remake and just go, well, what happened there? Well, they're just like the city government. And that's just their city. It's like, no. Like, Calm is the scene of like, no. This is like our planet.
Yes.
We are Shinra.
And I think the thing that they also set off really early with Shinra, what I really like, is that Shinra is tracking them. They are always know where they are, and they are not always actively pursuing them. Like they're keeping tabs on them. Because I thought that was interesting. Like Final Fantasy VII, the original one, is like, why isn't Shinra just popping up all the time? It's like, oh no, they're keeping tabs on them. They're like kind of like letting them go on their little journey. For some confusing reasons. I really love that attack on the town, and then like kind of why they get let go is like, you know, I think they show a scene with Rufus. It's like, no, just let them go.
Yep.
How did you feel about kind of like walking in that open world for the first time? Because we talk a lot about like the Assassin's Creed maps going like, oh no. Did you have an oh no moment, or are you like, hey, this is kind of cool?
I thought it was manageable, and we'll talk about it when we get to side stuff. Like,
so wait, the first time you walk on the open world, you're like, this is manageable. is that what you're about?
Not the first time. Maybe that was probably a couple hours in. My first time was just like, oh, I think because they pumped up like open world so hard that like it wasn't. I think it was just like okay, I'm here. And Grasslands, like I feel like of the stuff that I actually watched for this, 90% of it was Grasslands.
Sure.
So yeah, I had more of that. Like I think like, oh wow, we're doing big stuff. When I was like, I got to the second map and the third open map, like that was more where it's kind of hit me like, oh, we're doing big stuff. But it always felt manageable. I feel like even when you first get into it, I think Assassin's Creed, what was the last one I played? The Greek one, Odyssey.
Yeah.
When you get off the boat or whatever the opening scene is there, when you get on the boat, like it literally just instantly is like, and there's like 4,000 markers on your, HUD. And this is just like, no, go to the, I think it was like a farm. I was like, go to the farm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. On your way to the farm, you pass something. Oh yeah. These things are here. I thought it did a good job of introducing them there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of like, actually the thing that really excited me in the Grasslands was the first Mog House and going, oh, there's fun stuff in this. There's fun, weird stuff. And I was like, this is a world full of fun, weird stuff, which made me more excited that it was a big open thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
which I think hits a lot better than a lot of the overly serious tone of a lot of these open world games where it's like, no, you need serious business in the open world if we're going to keep people's attention.
Yeah, exactly. And like Assassin's Creed is just going to be full of guys. It's just a bunch of people, like, but there's not cool monsters and stuff. It's like, oh, this is going to be full of monsters and fun fantasy stuff. Yeah.
Yep. So we get out of the grasslands. We start moving our way through the swamp. Snake boss, big and crazy.
Really cool.
Yeah. One of the tougher bosses, I feel like, in the game. Like, that was one of the ones I got stuck on more than any other ones. There were that one and then Rufus and Gold Saucer were kind of the two that, like, stuck out to me. It's like, those ones sucked.
I was kind of genuinely surprised because I think in the original one, that's just, like, a thing you run away from. And then you find it dead later because Sephiroth, like, murked it sort
takes
of thing.
Care of it, yeah.
But I really liked they had the boss fight. And then this is, like, after the boss fight, you run to Sephiroth like in person and you see him actually do the killing of the snake. It's like, oh, okay. That was another one of those like signals in my head, like, okay, we're doing things a little bit different. But I remember that every time that I enjoyed when Sephiroth in person came up, it happens like a very few times. Yep. Like when he comes up in person, it is like, I'm going to show you my might sort of thing. It was like,
they're all moments.
Like those. Yeah. I thought that was really slick. I really like that.
I do like that.
To see that.
Yeah. And I think it serves another purpose. Cause I think, again, if you don't know the full Final Fantasy VII story, we defeated Sephiroth. He's done. We finished him. We beat him at the end of that remake.
Oh, who's
the new
bad guy? Yeah.
Like, and this is where it's like, no. He's still very much a presence in this world. It's not just in Cloud's head. He's not just haunting Cloud. Like, no. Sephiroth is here. He is still an issue. He is still our goal. And we're going to have more final boss fights with Sephiroth coming up later.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
He's our one guy we got. So we're sticking with him. But and again, I think this is where the game starts hitting its stride is like you start getting into stuff. We get some introduction from the Turks here. Our new Turk.
Elena.
That you're very excited about. She was odd. I don't know how I felt about her.
I like Elena because she's just a sweary, mean person.
Yeah.
And the thing that I thought was kind of funny with her particular is that, like, Shinra in this game is very much like, no, we must stand back and let them do their thing. And Elena's like, no, we need to kick their ass all the time. So, like, I just really like that anytime they showed Shinra, like, being this, like, dark and secretive organization, and Elena's like, we should just be kicking their ass all of the time. What are we doing?
have you seen the guns we have?
Yeah, exactly. I just like that she was a smart ass because I think all of the other Turks had some sort of like history with Aerith and like, oh, we don't really want to hurt Aerith. And like there's certain things we're doing. And then she's like, no, let's go punch them in the face.
They're dead. We get them. Done.
It's her, and there's a lot of what I'll call quote unquote annoying characters that annoy the main cast that I really enjoy. They're not annoying to me as the player, but it's fun to have an annoying character to the main cast. It's like always just out there just being a little shit.
It's the Majima in like Yakuza Zero.
Sure. Yes.
It's like that thing where it's just this antagonist that's not really an antagonist. But they're there to antagonize you.
Exactly. She's a perfect antagonist. That's a very funny way to put it, yeah.
So then we get to Junon. And you go to under Junon first. I think this is again
how that looks.
Yeah. I do too. And it's just again, it's one of those first little villages. It's not a city. It's just this little area. It's kind of hidden under Shinra. Again, you get that like overbearing feeling of Shinra, kind of the same setup that you get in Midgar with it being above and under.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
You run into Yuffie.
Yes. Yeah.
And under Junon.
We had a little argument on when we run into Junon, but you were right. This is where we run into Yuffie. Yeah.
I just want to. So we'll just kind of talk about Yuffie all together here because she's one of the few main new characters in this. She is fantastic in this. It might be my favorite character just because our main group outside of her, especially to this point, is just so straight laced, hard boiled. Let's get to the next thing. Let's go.
Yeah.
And she's just like bouncing around, joking. Let's get some material. Like, what are we doing? Like, and just she instantly fits in. And it's just so great how she somewhere that's like almost like squirrels into the group. Where you're like, I don't really know why you're here. We don't want you. Like, and you're just like, no, I'm tagging. And it's just, it takes kind of the goofiness of the world in the game and inserts it into your party immediately. So it's constantly becomes a staple of the game versus just this goofy stuff that you kind of bounce into here and there.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. Yeah. Cause she does bring sort of like a levity to the group. I do. And again, this is like another character annoys the group, but I find very endearing because she annoys the group. And it's funny. They do this a lot where Yuffie in particular is annoying Cloud, and it's like so good, all the Cloud lines of him just like not caring, doesn't want to interact with her at all.
Let's just move on.
Let's just move on, keep going. I don't care about your theatrics and stuff. And it is funny, like literally every time. That also kind of made me realize that all the characters are so different. That they all have like very different personalities that I really enjoyed watching them all bounce off each other.
For sure. Last thing on Yuffie, and it's just a short one. I love the running, like, she's sick on everything. Like every time you're on a boat, any sort of mechanical thing. The chocobo, I don't think it ever is mentioned on a chocobo, but literally every other thing is like, I'm a puke. Just very fun, very goofy. And again, it's this way to add to that joyous feeling that a lot of this world has outside of Shinra. And it inserts into the group so well.
Mm, exactly.
So with that kind of craziness, we get on the dolphin to get out of I love the dolphin minigame is fantastic, by the way. We'll talk minigames later. But the dolphin one is just, it's just such a stupid thing. And it's so funny. It's so entertaining. And then we take the ship up, and Upper Junon might be one of my favorite points in this game. Like this
is, I think it is. I think it's my favorite part of the game.
It's so good. Just from the start of like, we got to go get the uniforms, trying to fit in. The town is just impressive.
Yes, it is literally a Hitman level. I was playing it going like, this feels like Hitman. And then you run into a bald club. I was like, there's no way this is a coincidence. Because I mean, the thing that Hitman really, really excels at is like, they have like your main area that the people see. So you have like your kind of like touristy areas, but then also lets you kind of go in the back rooms. And this one also kind of lets you do that. But like, really, it was really neat going through the individual shops and individual rooms, and everything just feels like very, very, very different. I love that like level design in general. It's really funny. I like how they kind of get in the thing where he needs to sort of build his crew Shinra soldiers. So it is neat. It gives you an excuse to go in and see every little thing. Yep. And there's always like every time you meet these soldiers, there's always some funny, dumb conversation that you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And it's just like definitely setting the tone of the game. Like every conversation you have is silly. I really, really love that area. It's also really pretty looking. It looks insane. It looks absolutely crazy.
And I love that it's one of the few spots where I feel like you see normal people just going about their lives.
Yeah.
Because especially in Remake, it was always like, we got to stop Shinra, we got to stop Shinra. And people always had Shinra kind of hanging over them in the different sectors. And here it's just like, no, there's just some normal ass people in this world.
Yeah.
These people are just shopping and they're going out to dinner and they're just hanging out in the city. And Shinra's there, but we're just normal ass people. And I think it contextualized a lot of the world for me, where it's like, okay, no. There is points in this world where it's not this under Junon. It's not, Shinra occupation, but it's like, no. Like, we're just here. And yeah, Shinra's here, but I see the big gun. Yeah, they're a big gun, but we're just living our lives.
Yeah, no, there are some really lived in parts, and like that felt the most lived in, like you were saying. The other thing I do like is they kind of reinforce again here, because in the original game, they dress up as soldiers and get in successfully without anybody noticing. And I think from like immediately, Shinra's like, hey, they're here. Like, we know they're here. It's like, just let them do their thing. I really, really like that sort of logical sort of like, they're in Shinra HQ. Everybody should recognize them. And they're acknowledging like, yes, we do recognize them. And we're just going to kind of let them keep moving.
And sure enough, Cloud, like suspect number one, is leading a parade battalion in the like victory parade and celebration parade. God. And
the parade is so good. In the practice parade where like both you, Tifa, and Aerith all know the perfect like marching thing, like just out of nowhere, is so good. It's so good. Funny.
So good. Yeah. And then they shoot the big gun, which I thought was just a crazy scene, and just everybody's reaction to it. Just such a crazy scene of like, no, like this intimidating thing. Cause it almost looks like a relic when you're walking around. Like, that's not real. That's just like, that's from the old days. Like, it's just sitting there. Like, nobody's. And then he's less like, no. Rufus just like, shoot it.
Yeah. And you can hear the guys like, it's like, I don't know if we can. So like, they're not sure if they weren't even sure if they could fire it off or like dust it off or whatever. Yeah. It's really cool.
It has that like firing the Death Star, the first moment feeling of like this big intimidating thing that you've been staring at for like a couple hours at this point. Like, what does that do? Does it work? What's going on? And it's just like, oh no. Like, it's about to go down. Like, this thing is not a toy.
and it's going to start a new war with Wutai. And I was like, I don't remember a war, like a brand new war being a whole big part of Final. I gotta go back and finish that. But yeah, I was like, I was surprised. I was like, oh, this is actually kind of a scary big moment. Yeah.
I do feel like they push Wutai a lot more in this than they did in the original. Yes. There's a lot more. Yeah. Like, I remember it being kind of like a background thought in 7. And again, I haven't played it in a long time, so forgive me for being wrong there. But in my mind, that was never one of those key plot points, was what's going on with Wutai.
Yeah. I love the part with Rufus in this part. It's so good.
So well executed, because it's not what you expect in any way, shape, or form. Because at this point, you do know that they're keeping tabs on him. You do know that they don't want them dead in this moment. But just him going like, no, we're going to work with you.
I think that was a legit deal. I know Barrett's kind of like, we shouldn't trust Syndra, but I was like, I think with Rufus.
Because I don't remember how much of it is up to this point or not, but everything with Rufus is like, I don't give a shit about anything but finding this promised land, and they're the people who can do it. So whatever, it doesn't matter. And nothing else matters, because what I want to find is this promised land. So if they're going to tank soldiers, if we're going to look back, I don't care. I want to find this. And Aerith and Cloud are the ones that I believe can do this.
Yeah. And then Yuffie is coming up the back. I remember in that scene, like, as he's making the deal, like, I was like literally in my head going like, oh no, as Yuffie is like, I'm going to assassinate this guy.
And it's just, you constantly have this feeling of just like, I think it's one of those scenes where I constantly just felt like, I'm playing a game that I know the story of, and I genuinely don't know what's going on right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And not in a bad way, but in like this really cool way of like, if you go through with this, like, this could drastically change so much of this game and so much of the story. And then Yuffie, and then I'm like, I want that story. No, Yuffie, I want that story.
I thought she might have been able to do it. I was like, oh, that'd have been cool. But it still ruins the deal and everything, and then as Shinra becomes a more active hater.
They're not quite as big fans.
But
no, again, I think that's where you get to, like, okay, at some point, like, Rufus has to save face and be like, no, they tried to kill me. We should probably actually do something about this. Like, we should kind of calm down a little bit. One of my favorite areas in the game, hands down. We get on the cruise ship to Costa del Sol.
Yeah, very weird swap all of a sudden, because it's a very intense escape from Upper Junon. You're lying to soldiers and getting to kill a bunch of guys, and it's like, now we're on a cruise ship level. It's like, okay.
let's go play some Queen's Blood.
Queen's Blood. Yeah, and Doug was very excited that the Queen's Blood, all his Queen's Blood practice totally paid off. That whole part is incredible if you play Queen's Blood.
So you'll have to talk about it a little bit, because there was an option to just straight up skip that tournament and play one game of Queen's Blood, which I did, because I did not have time to learn a board game inside my video game. So I just instantly skipped to the scene where Red comes walking out, like, as a soldier, like, no, let me have a piece of this.
So the way it played out with the Queen's Blood stuff is really cool, because it's a literal tournament. So, like, your first level is like, you get to fight people from Remake. Who are the guys of the Sector 5 Wall Market people are in it, like Madame M and
the honeybee guy.
The honeybee guy. Yeah. And like, they're guys you can fight. And then the next round you can fight, you can go against like Aerith and Tifa. And then the final round, I think, is with not Chadley, but with like this like cool Queen's Blood thing. It actually, I used to watch Yu-Gi-Oh as a kid. It plays out like a Yu-Gi-Oh tournament in super fun ways. And felt really, really rewarding as a result. So how that Red scene plays out is that now Cloud is this big winner, and everyone's like, oh my god, he's amazing. And then Red comes out, and he's like a dark horse player coming to challenge the winner, sort of thing. So it's like a very cool like scene that interrupts his like big celebration of when like Red comes into one of like the very, very amazing scene. I love that part.
And to me, all it was like, he just comes out looking goofy and like, oh, this is silly and fun, because you have no context for anything, because you just skip the whole thing.
So Cloud doesn't win? Does he just come out and no, fight he comes Cloud? Out like, or?
I'm trying to remember how it played out. It was something like That's he fine. Comes out and is just like, I don't think Cloud won. I think Cloud like comes in second or something. And they're like, oh, okay, Red, sure. you need to play somebody else to prove you're good. I don't remember how it played out. Because it was literally like, skip, 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 skip. Oh, shit, I have to play a game of Queen's Blood? Damn it.
That's really funny. Yeah, but no, it's played as like a very cool, like interrupting the big celebration scene that I really liked. That was such a fun scene they kept. That's the thing with this game. Like, they kept everything in like fun ways and then blew out with their own fun, goofy stuff as well. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were wondering if that red scene was even going to come in the game. It's like, yeah, we're going to do it. And then we're also going to add a whole heaping bunch of our own cool, fun, goofy stuff that we're going to do. Yeah.
Yep. Speaking of fun, goofy, Costa del Sol.
Yeah.
Beach time. A lot of mini games, like I said. We'll deal with mini games and all that stuff because I think this is where we get to mini game city in this game.
Yeah.
I will say I do not like having Costa del Sol and Gold Saucer so close to each other. It's original. It's there. It had to be there. It's the way the game plays out. But just it's like mini games to mini games, and it was too much mini game for me at that point. By the time we were into Gold Saucer, but
I can believe it. Yeah, as a mini game aficionado, I was like, I am loving this.
I was loving it for a while, and then I loved Gold Saucer. I was like, all right, let's get back to this game. And it's like, and now Golden Saucer. And I was like, more. Okay, but you meet Johnny.
Johnny again, annoying characters done really, really well. Yeah.
And we got to go to his ratty ass hotel in the back corner that you have to like shuffle through like trash to get back to. It's another scene where it's just fun. It's just so much fun just to be walking around this place.
And then you have to get like beach attire and stuff. It's like, it's all very silly and light. And I was like, this is nice.
And I think that's what this game does too, is that it dwells the right amount on the, like, you're on an adventure, like, no road trip is like super tense the whole way. Like, you're going to have some moments where it's like, let's go see the big M&Ms. Like, why not? There's big M&Ms over there.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
What's this tourist trap? Let's go hang on that tourist trap for an hour or two. And like, that's what I liked about this, is the journey they were on didn't feel like time constrained so much that it's like, you felt weird, like taking a week vacation in Costa del Sol. I was like, you know what? We need a break. Like, Sephiroth's out there and he's going to do bad stuff, but like, we know where he's going. We know what's going on. We're okay. It hasn't happened yet. Yeah. Let's take a break. And it just,
let's have our really beach episode sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Which of course ends in chaos.
Yeah, of course. And fun chaos though. It's not, it's like a mad side. It's like not, it's not even a serious boss fight. It's like a very silly, like, like a Bond villain sort of thing.
I love that. I love that he comes out and it's just like, crazy, ha ha ha, and you're like, where did you even come from? Like, I don't even know why you're here.
Hojo, is that his name?
Yeah, it's Hojo. Yeah, Hojo comes back and it's just like, what how, huh, what? You're on this beach because, and then
you have a very cool boss fight.
Yeah,
that is super fun.
The scene where Cloud picks up the beach umbrella, probably one of my top five favorite scenes in this game, which is stupid beyond belief, but it was just one of those moments where I like literally paused because I was laughing so hard at like, this is ridiculous. I cannot do this boss fight right now because what the hell was that?
And I thought the beach umbrella was going to break and he pulled out a sword. Nope, you do the whole boss fight with the beach umbrella. And it's really cool. I love how that fight ends because, again, it's a whole goofball area. It ends with a goofball scene where Yuffie uses her doppelganger power on Johnny to create a ton of Johnnies to basically make the final kill on it. And it was just like, it was so great. I think the thing that was, again, the thing that I loved about the remake series in general is they always think about the consequences of everything, because the Johnnies don't immediately disappear. They now have their own like little side quest of all these little mini Johnnies and stuff, and it's like, it's so funny. I love how they're just like, they'll just lean into every bit possible. And I was laughing during the whole Johnny bit too. It was just so good.
I think now is a good time to pause, because at this point we've seen Zack 3 or 4 times, so I just want to take a second and dive through Zack.
Yeah,
because this is, I think, right around the point where Zack meets Biggs, which is kind of where you start to get some feelings of what's going on with Zack and what's going on in that world.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good point to kind of stop and talk about Zack for a second.
Sure.
I don't like it at all. It was the worst part of this game.
So funny.
And for I liked it a lot. My issue was, it starts off so strong. I love the way they introduce it. But then I think there's 4 of them until you really get any sense of anything, and it's so many just like 10 minute scenes of like Zack walking to Aerith's house, Zack in Aerith's house, and you're getting like little bits and pieces here, but it just, I needed something. By the 4th time I'm seeing this, I should have a fairly firm grasp of what is happening with Zack, and I felt like I had no clue.
You know what I liked about those scenes was not anything plot related. I like that you got to see characters from Remake you're not going to see otherwise reacting to the events of Remake, that you don't like, you there's not a lot but, and throughout Rebirth of people talking about the plate falling. And I felt in those moments like Biggs died, so you got to see Biggs as the only surviving Avalanche member still in Midgar reacting to all the people dying. I thought that was really cool. Marlene not having Barrett, Aerith's adoptive mom having Aerith hurt. So I just thought it was like really interesting from that perspective, not plot, not like multiverse, but, or whatever, of just seeing those characters interacting.
I agree, because those are because it is interesting, because we do kind of just abandon Remake off the jump of this game, but there's no contextual need, or there's no contextual reasoning for it. So in my mind, it's like, are these people actually seeing it? Are they seeing the same events? Are they seeing different events? Like, I never felt like these were the people who are knowing what happened in Remake, or did they not know? What did they know? Because Aerith's in here, Aerith's sick, but Aerith's like at the Golden Saucer at this point. Like, who are these people? What are they? I constantly have this, like, I need to know more about what this is in order to enjoy it. Because right now, the only thing I'm thinking as I'm going through is like, does Marlene know that Barrett's alive? Because there's the newscast where Barrett's like, does she know this? Does she not know this? How is she living? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, just had this confusion sense. And it's like, this is just confusing to me. I don't understand it. I don't know why it's here. I hate it. 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 Can I skip it?
The thing is, like, I don't think I cared enough about the plot. And again, like, didn't care about positive. And I'm saying this is a positive. Because to me, like, I didn't care that I didn't know, because just seeing the characters deal with the situation that was presented was interesting enough, rather than just trying to figure out like what it was in the bigger picture. It's like, it'll come eventually. And even when it does, I don't really care. But again, it's like, I just, and especially why I started doing all the side stuff, is like the main plot to me, and just the, I feel like Final Fantasy VII, whatever, could just do with an entirely different plot within the same setting.
Yes.
I just like seeing those characters interacting. So it was always totally fine for me. And like, we'll figure out eventually what this means. But to me, I don't care how Biggs lived, but seeing Biggs talk about how the other Avalanche members died was interesting enough for me to like not care about how it fit in the other stuff. I can see though where that would be frustrating, because it gets a little bonkers, especially near the end with about four or five different of those scenes in different contexts and all that stuff. Yeah.
And I agree, because I do think like the first I was like, okay, I'm in on this, but it took so long to get to that point of context that like it took my initial enjoyment of it. It was almost like I could feel my enjoyment and like desire to see what was happening decrease every time Zach popped on screen. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, this is so cool. Okay, but what's going on? Okay, but seriously, what the hell is going on? And it's just like, the more it happened, the more I was just like, you're just wasting my time. Let me get back to Cloud, please.
We definitely don't want to get in like theories and stuff like that. The thing that, even after understanding kind of what was going on at the end of the game, it never made sense that in that world, they were still looking for a guy with a Buster Sword who helped Avalanche. I was like, well, Cloud wasn't there in that timeline, so I don't understand what's going on there at all. And like, that was never really answered.
And I think that bothered me too, where it's just, I felt like there were so many unanswered questions of like, exactly how this is working. And it never felt like anything other than them trying to like fuck with you. Like, that's literally, it just felt like, this is just here to mess with you. Like, we just want you to be able to like, what happened? Did what happened in Remake happen? Did it happen this way? Did it happen that way? Is Zach alive? Is Zach dead? Is Aerith dead? What? Is this in the future? Is this in the past? Is it a different dimension? Is it a different time?
It's interesting. I thought there's some neat intimate moments to the point where like, I actually didn't feel it was as not neener as you're making out to, but I can see how it could be.
I was so stuck in the that like, I couldn't even, I'm not invested in these characters because they're probably dead. They probably don't matter. They probably this is probably just a dream. Like, I don't know what this is. Does it even matter?
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. Yeah.
Rant on Zach over.
Until we get to the end, I'm sure.
Yeah. North Coral. So we get to Barrett's town. Barrett's hometown.
Oh, man. that part is so brutal. It's so good. I love the acting in this whole scene where Barrett's just like, he puts his sunglasses back on.
Yep.
And just like, he's like, I deserve all of this. Do not fight anybody. Don't let
them talk shit to me. Let them throw stuff at me. I don't care. Yep. This is what I deserve. Like, let me just walk through this with my head down and we'll get to the Golden Saucer.
Yeah, that whole part is just so brutal. It was interesting seeing the backstory with like, I'm not sure if you see it here or whatever, but you see how he kind of sold out the town, not on purpose. He just like wanted what was best for the town. It just ended up all blowing up in his face.
Kind of taking what sounds like too good of a deal and kind of getting that, like, very clearly see that this place matters to him and he was trying to do the, it just... it kind of speaks to that like shitty Shinra-ness of like, oh no, they're like just they're out for their own gain and they're gonna double cross everybody and they're gonna do everything and just Barrett got suckered.
And I love how you go by the blown up reactor on the way to there. It's just like, yeah, it's so good. And this is the stuff like great character stuff, you know, plot wise, does it make sense for a Barrett to go through that time? Probably not. It's just really neat to see how Barrett reacts to that. Yeah.
I do think that's the one thing with this game too, is plot wise, a lot of it's just kind of like, yep. Plot. But character stuff is always the stuff that stands out.
Yep.
We get to the Golden Saucer. Everybody's the favorite. Best
intro ever.
That whole scene just flying in there is like, if you ever flown to Vegas, like you get a little bit of that sense when you can see the lights and everything. It was just like, somebody flew into Vegas. I'm like, but what if this was just like around you, like as you're flying into this? It was so cool.
I wish they did this more. I feel it was a little unearned with the Golden Saucer stuff because in the Honeybee, they really led up to the dance scene. But this was just like, we're just going to make this game a musical for about 5 minutes. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
where Yuffie, I think it's like, it stars Yuffie and they have like a dance battle with like the Honeybee guys.
Yep.
And it's just like, it's so, I don't know. I'm so glad that they didn't spend, I wish they had spent maybe set like a little bit more context with the Honeybee guys being there. But like at the point, it's just like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just really neat having like a fun choreographed musical scene, like in a Disney movie. You're not questioning why Simba is dancing to the music. You're just like, I'm along for the ride. And like, there's one other AAA game that did it, but there's no other AAA game out there. The one that you're playing through currently, there's no other AAA game out there that is doing giant musical scenes.
I'm playing through Alan Wake 2 for everybody to kind of get what Doug is referencing there.
Yeah. And I just love, like, as soon as that scene's over, you're just like in the Golden Saucer and it's just like, enjoy. I love the Golden Saucer in the Final Fantasy VII, and like they blew it out bigger. They did it bigger than it was even the original game.
Yeah. It feels like Disney World. Like, it's we're going to this area and this area is its whole unique thing. And it's not huge. It's not giant, but this one area very much feels like I'm at this big giant fight. I'm at this like race course. I'm at this haunted hotel. Just everything has that Disney World feeling of like, so much care was put into this to make this feel like it does, that it's incredible just to wander around there for a while.
I think the thing I really appreciate, especially with the hotel area just looks like really unique with like that giant sort of like goblin-y thing that's like in the main foyer. And I was just thinking like, no other AAA game is going to can't do something like this. And FF7 was just like, well, it's in the original game, so we can do it. I just don't think like scenes like that, because they really don't fit in the context of the game. If you're thinking like a God of War or something, it's like, well, this doesn't really fit with what we're trying to do here. But like, I just felt, it just felt so exciting and so interesting and so detailed and so many cool ideas. Like the haunted hotel, there's a room you go into, like your bedroom has like 10 little gags that are around the room on top of everything too. It's just like, there's just no other AAA game that's doing anything like this. And it really did feel like totally distinct areas. And there's just no other, there's like literally no other game I can even like game think I can think of that could even fit something like this. Like, it kind of reminded me of the Horizon Las Vegas level, but even that had to do so much work of contextualizing why that worked in that universe. And this was just like, no, let's just do crazy goofy stuff because we can, and like, don't even worry about it. Let's just do it. It's just incredible. Yeah.
And each part of this game feels so unique. Costa del Sol is its own world. Like, Golden Saucer is its own world, that I think they've kind of up to this point established, like, no, there are very distinct parts of this world that feel different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, Grasslands, nothing like Costa del Sol. Midgar, nothing like Calm. Every place has its own unique feel to it. And I think that kind of, again, lends it to Golden Saucer being able to do whatever the hell it wants to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It feels like totally different games. It feels like a world. It feels like a world of different stuff in it.
Yeah, shocking. Really cool. What about, we should probably do that. Yeah. We should make our game feel like a giant world. We meet our next party member.
Yeah.
Yay.
Cait Sith, so good in this game. So good.
I love that his intro is like this really good foreshadowing with the fortunes that he gives you. Just like, again, like knowing what's coming. Oh, and by this point, because he literally starts with like, oh yeah, your fortune is you'll lose what you treasure most. Oh yeah, well, that's depressing. Let me find you another one. Oh, there's going to be an unexpected pleasant twist. So it's like, lose what you treasure most was the first one I think he says, which is like, okay, Aerith, got it. Okay.
Oh,
but
yeah,
then an unexpected pleasant twist too. And you're like, you're not going to kill Aerith, are you? You can chicken out on that, aren't you? So it kind of instantly gave you this like sense of like what's coming. And I thought that was just a really great way to introduce him. And again, kind of in the same vein of Yuffie, like just he's fun. It's I like that we're adding fun people, and we'll talk about Vincent later, but I like that we're adding fun people to our party of gruff Avalanche member terrorist people.
And I maybe I don't remember this from Seven. I really like that he was like the mascot of Golden Saucer. Like everybody knew him. I thought that was like really neat that he's like, oh no, he's like the guy, besides Dio, of just being like this, like the mascot of Golden Saucer. I was like, that's such a cool idea for a character. Again, something you would never see in a AAA game.
Well, yeah, you don't see like just, yeah, little guys riding bigger things, and that's a party member and they can jump on and off, and just again, so unique in what it's doing. We'll talk again mini games and stuff, so we'll spend a little more time there in a little bit. But you leave, you meet Gus, who's just this weird super fun guy. Gus might be one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, North Coral is like such a good, especially like right after Golden Saucer, going to this like grimy
feels
nasty, dangerous in a fun way area.
Another of my favorite scenes happened here, which is when Barrett meets Dine.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, this, I think, might be one of my favorite scenes. Mm-hmm. It's so tense. I feel like you don't really have a good sense of Barrett other than tough guy through a lot of games. And just when you kind of see the way that he reacts to where Dine is and how he feels about the town, and Dine like kind of calling him out, because everybody else was calling him out about the shit that he did. Yeah. And he was like, let's just move through it. But Dine starts doing it. And you're just like, and you just like see this sense of dread and this emotion coming to him. It's amazing the character work that's done there. And then even like Dine's reaction to finding out that Marlene's still alive. Yeah. Like it's just, it's like this, these heart wrenching moments for like 5 or 10 minutes when you meet him. Mm. It's just incredible and amazing.
I really did like that. I like, again, the game does us a lot, and we'll probably talk about it a little later. I love that that boss fight was like just Barrett. He's like, no, I need this by myself. It's like, okay, it's just gonna be Barrett. I really like, they split the party member in interesting ways when it makes for like more dramatic scenes. And that was just really cool. And as a boss fight, was like really unique. It's a really strange boss fight compared to the rest of the game, because you're like getting into cover and stuff that you're not normally doing.
It actually feels like a third person shooter a little bit.
Yeah. It's a cool one. It went a little Resident Evil for my taste, but you know, that's okay. That's okay. We're not gonna get into it. It was a very nice emotional scene.
Yes. I loved it. Probably one of my favorite scenes in the game. Just, it's so good. Sure. Just seeing Barrett vulnerable to that level. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know. It was not expecting it, and just comes off so well in that moment. Scarlet shoots Barrett's arm off. I don't remember if that was in Seven.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I'm like trying to remember, but regardless, that scene was like pretty cool. I do like that Scarlet. I don't remember how much influence she had in Final Fantasy VII in general. I like that she's like Yuffie's final boss. She's kind of Barrett's final boss. Yeah. It's kind of like they set Scarlet up in like interesting ways of how they interact with the party. I think probably more so than any of the other executive branch, I guess.
Other than like Red and Hojo, like she's kind of the one where it's just like has the most impact on our party. And just, I found it weird that she's such a major player in this game. I did not expect that one coming in. And again, I barely even remember if she's in the original. Like, I don't.
And she's such a fun, unapologetic evil person.
Yeah.
Like in Shinra, I think like a lot of Shinra guys are kind of like, you know, kind of gray sort of thing. No, she's like, she's just pure evil person. Yep. That's great.
Hate it all. Yep.
Yep.
So we run out of there to Gungaga.
Yep.
My least favorite area in this game.
Dude, even replaying those parts to clean up, I'm like, oh god.
Could not get around that to save my life. So
it's not a fun place to even walk around in, yeah.
We'll just jump to getting to town. The moment with Zach's parents. Again, I don't know why. Now that I'm thinking about this, I really liked the sad moments in this game. I feel like this game did sad good. Really, really well.
And it does sad and exuberantly happy really, really well.
Yeah. It hit those two extremes. But the moment where you walk into Zach's house, you meet his parents, like, oh well, do you know Zach? Like, tell me about him. And just you kind of have this like lingering feeling, and I think at this point, like, you're still kind of like, is he dead? What's going on? How much do we know about Zach? So you're like, I think he's dead, guys, but maybe he's in Midgar. I don't really know. And it's just, I don't know, I thought it was a really, really cool scene there.
I really like that scene. There's a scene where there's a really, really good line Aerith has. I'm gonna screw it up, but basically after they see after you talk to her parents, you can tell her, it's like, oh, I don't think they were bothered by it. And her line back is like, no, they were bothered by it, but it's okay. It's just like, it's just interesting. Like, they yeah. were sad that I was there and they did not like that. I just thought that was like a really cool acknowledgement of that. Yeah.
Yeah. We get Evil Cloud. This is where.
Oh, so this is like, this is post boss fight, right?
Yeah.
Where.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Where Cloud shoves Tifa into the Mako pool below.
And that was fucking crazy. Was that in the original one?
Where I don't think so. I don't remember. Tifa? I don't remember Cloud going quite as crazy as he does in this one.
And there, I think that's the first time you see like blood in yeah. the game too.
It's and that's
like,
what I mean. It's oh, just fuck. Yeah. It's the first. I think it's this first Evil Cloud, and it's this first inclination that I had of like, are we setting Cloud up to be a villain and Zack yes. to be this redemptive hero? Like that's kind of yeah. what I was starting to feel at this point. So. I don't know. It was very intense and shocking.
And this game does this a lot where just that would have been cool. And then they immediately followed up with something weird and confusing. And so yeah. just like letting the moment sit. I mean, yeah. this definitely comes in the finale where like they have this like really cool, impactful moment and then they have to make it weird. And I was just like, I were like, oh, again, like what you said, it's like, I think I even texted you, I was like, oh, so Cloud, like, murdered, is, like, going to be the villain of this. Like,
I was ahead of you. I was ahead of you a couple days, yeah. and I think I texted you, like, I have a new theory for the ending of this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. And they set them up, and I love that stuff. That stuff they do so very, very well. And I don't even think it's in our notes, but the scene immediately after that was just weird.
Where we're, like, surfing through Tifa's memories.
In like the weapons, and then you meet this what are those things called? Not they're not spirits, they're called ghosts things.
Yeah,
and no, Sephiroth has a bunch of ghosts.
The
weapons have a bunch of whispers, and then they're like fighting. I'm just like, what is? And that see that to me annoyed me is what is happening.
See, but that totally to me felt like
Zack stuff.
That felt like it had a purpose. Like I was like, that's okay, because so I think that's the introduction so of like stupid. The two different color of whispers, right? Isn't that the first time you see like the two different colors? And that yeah. I feel like again, it was like this was set up that like these whispers are kind of defying fate. So maybe Tifa's dead. Maybe yeah. they're doing like that. All kind of fit into the context of the world that the whispers were introduced in remake, where Zack is just like, we're doing a new thing and we're not talking about it.
See, you know what's funny with the whisper? Actually, at that moment, the whisper is like, oh man, they're like a real thing and not just like a player expectations. Now they're gonna like have to explain them. It's like, like to me, like every time, like I think Darth Vader sucks now because they explained Darth Vader. I know we're not gonna get into it. I can see you getting fighting, like you're putting your dukes up. But to me, Darth Vader is much less interesting because they explained it. And I felt like with the whispers, like it was cool. Oh, they killed Fate, and Fate was kind of the player's expectations. End of story. And now they're like, no. There's two different whispers. Sephiroth controls some of them. Aerith might control the other one, but the planet actually controls. I was like, oh fuck, man. I was just like, oh, no. I was totally tuned out of that whole scene. It was cool when Sephiroth stabbed one of the weapons and almost stabbed Tifa. I was like, that's sick.
Yep.
That was my only reaction to that whole scene.
Yeah, I think it was one of those ones where it felt almost too abstract to really get a
yes.
really like. I know you're setting stuff up. I know this is important, but you're over my head here, guys.
I'm really glad they never did that again.
Anyway. So after we wrap that up, we're heading to Cosmo Canyon.
Yeah.
I love this area.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. This area bored the hell out of me.
How dare you? Are you serious? Are you for real? This is like one of my favorite parts.
Fun background fact. I basically left Cosmo Canyon out of our outline, and then Doug was like, you forgot Cosmo Canyon. And I think I just said, no, I didn't.
Okay. Gee, don't care.
Yeah, and that's the thing. About Gee stuff. I think that's okay. The thing. Like, the Gee yeah. stuff was just so pushed in this that I was just like, I don't want to know. Like, you're giving me the whispers. Yeah. You're giving me this Zack world. You're giving me all this stuff. It's like, I got so many different convoluted stories of what this world is. I don't need one more that does not directly affect my main party.
I did like, okay, let's not talk about Gee stuff yet. I really liked exploring Cosmo Canyon, has the most fun chocobo of getting to fly around.
Pilot Wings chocobo is fun.
Yeah, that was super cool. I really liked the Cosmo Canyon area, like the town, I think it's called, I think the town's called, I don't remember the town itself is called.
I don't remember.
Yeah, whatever. But I do like that's when like Red 13 drops his voice completely because they do a few hints. I just like that. I like that you can see Red 13 as like a kid, and it makes it really sad. And I loved how they changed him from this like bitter lab rat animal who just wants to, you know, fight, kill Hojo to this like scared kid. who like lost his parents.
Yep.
I just really, really love that stuff. And he just like, he just turned into a little kid through that whole scene. It was just like, it was just really, I don't know. It made me emotional in like weird ways where you're just like, you feel so bad for that character because they are probably even like the youngest of them. Yep. is like
especially like contextually age. And like species age and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like a 14 year old or something like that. Maybe 14, 15 year old kid. So I just really love that. I also like the town was like really cool. Cause it felt like, it feels like, I don't know if you've ever done this before, go to like a very spiritual place because there are people there who are there to take it seriously and there's tourists taking photos.
Yeah, you walk through like a big old cathedral and you're like, oh, you guys are like serious here. And I just want that. I heard there was a cool picture in the corner that I wanted to see.
Yeah, and like there's, I love walking through that because you'll run into tourists who are like, I hope the planet brings me fortune. And the other one is like a spiritual conference sort of stuff. Yeah. But then they also have like the Disney World type hotel. I just really love how that area is like laid out. It's just a really interesting area to explore. Also reminded me of Horizon Zero Dawn. Like I was just like, it's just neat seeing how that, yeah. how strongly that influenced it here. And then you get stuck in geek caves and I did not give a shit.
Yep. So, I think we can just skip right over those.
I thought there was some logic to the black material. Like why does it exist at all? Because there's these group that just like basically want to kill themselves, which is kind of cool.
Again, I think it's necessary for world building. It's necessary for where we're going with like Meteor and all the other things that come at the end of this game and the white and the black material. It's necessary. It just was one of those things where I was like, you go through the observatory, you go through the cave, you do the thing, and then you do the thing, and then you do the done. And just, it was like one of those where it's like, okay, like this could have been an email, like that type of feeling where like, you could have just let me talk to the elder. Where's the elder? Let the elder just give me some words. All right. Thanks, elder. I got it. Plot. Can say it, check it off. Plot makes sense. Everything explained. Let's move on, folks.
Two real quick moments I did like. I did like when Red 13 has to do the trial and they need somebody to observe it and Barrett gets picked and Barrett's like, why'd you pick me?
Why me?
And I thought that was really fun. I also like that the old guy is super dismissive of your group. He's like, you guys don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You guys just need to go learn, take some seminars because you guys are so off track. And then as you leave the town, the guy's like, actually, you guys might have a point. it was just neat. It was neat seeing like that kind of character like have sort of a going from I have so much to teach you to like, oh, actually, I think you guys have a lot to teach me. I love that.
That kind of stuff, I think, is always really fun.
Yeah. So that's why we left Cosmo Canyon that's why I put Cosmo Canyon back in the outline.
For that one guy, that one guy who learned his lesson. Yeah. Yeah. So go back to Nibelheim. I love the like, it's for all the guys with Mako poisoning. Like they just come back here. It's just good context. Really cool. Good context for it. It was fun walking in there and just kind of seeing like, what the fuck? And again, we've been messed with so much that like, did Nibelheim not burn down? Like, did we skip that? Was that a vision? Was that a fake cloud memory? Like what? I think this game has so much weirdness going on to it that I feel like you can almost only focus on like one or two of the weirdness things on it. Or like, that's where my brain just lost it with Zach, where it's just like this, there's so many weird plot threads happening. Like I need to pick one to stick with it. Cause it was just kind of like, I don't know, like Nibelheim's back. And I love that it was just like, oh yeah, everybody's just in here taking care of all these black robe guys who are wandering the earth now.
I liked that as soon as Tifa walked in, she's like, all this stuff is new. Mm-hmm. So like they knew. So like, it, like to me, I was like, okay, they did rebuild it. And I really liked that the town didn't just pretend like they didn't live there. They're like, oh, these are like previous residents. So Shinra bought this place. And basically it seemed like they were like doing like the company line, like, you guys need to get out of here. Like, you don't own this place. It's like, we don't want you to start trouble. Just so you know, you don't own any of this anymore. Shinra bought it up. So I did like that I think in the original game, they kind of pretend that it's like, oh, we're just pretending like it's the real town and nothing happened here. Mm-hmm. While they're like, no. Like, we acknowledge that this is the new town and you need to leave.
Some shit went down. We're not quite sure, but we're here now. And please leave.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I know we're not talking side stuff, but there is a cool side mission in that area where you see the black robe version of the calm innkeeper. And I thought that was like really cool. Their numbers are growing.
Yeah. I ran into him somewhere. I don't know if I might've actually done that side thing, but yeah, I definitely ran into that guy. We meet Vincent when we're running through Shinra Manor. Mm-hmm. So just to talk about Vincent here, Vincent is amazing. I love Vincent.
Love Vincent.
Love might be a bit, maybe a bit much. Yeah. He reminds me of Sir Arryn from Final Fantasy X. Like that, just like gruff, super tough. Yes. And like Sir Arryn is like amazing and incredible, and I like one of my favorite characters. And so it's like it's basically like him, but 6 years earlier. So sure, yeah. Kind of the prototype of it. So I like that aspect of it. I hate that he's not playable. It feels shitty.
That's so funny.
It feels like they're holding out. Like, that was my whole time. Like, because I think they told you, like, before, and like, Vincent might be in here, but he's not a part of your party in this game yet. Like, I think that was announced pre-release, so you kind of had that expectation that he wasn't going to be playable.
But with Red 13, he was not playable, but he was in fights, and then they did something similar in the Yuffie DLC with. Yep. That guy's name, who I can't remember, who was not playable, but had some cool stuff. It's like, oh, that's how they're going to do Vincent. And Vincent just kind of hangs around. Just that boss fight was crazy, though.
It was so tough. That was another one that got me.
That was like one of those, like, do I need to change the difficulty moments? when I'm playing in hard modes, I do have like this sort of like, do I need to change the difficulty moments? That was one of them. And then when I was done, I was like, ah, I should have cast slow on him.
That might have fixed. I do think we haven't talked too much about gameplay and combat. It's great, but I do feel like you kind of had those moments where you're like, oh, I was supposed to have this party. Whoops. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And you still kind of get through it. That one I was like by the skin of my teeth, though, for sure.
Yeah. Towards the end, we see again another character changing to the black robe guys. And I feel like this is where you start to really get a sense of our black robe dudes that we're following for some reason. Man,
that bummed me out so much.
Why did this really bum you out?
What do you mean? Roche, I love Roche. Roche is like one of my favorite characters, like for real, like of the whole remake series. Roche is like probably my favorite character.
Really?
Yeah. I liked him in remake because it's like, who is this silly? Because to me, it was like, this is like, why is this game getting silly all of a sudden? And then Rebirth is just all silly all the time. So he doesn't stand out as much, which I thought was interesting.
I get it.
No, I just I love rival characters. I just think he's a fun, goofy, anti-Cloud kind of. And then when he gets, and then once he kind of turns into Sephiroth, I was just like, and then he gets black robed. I was like, ah, oh, man, I was so bummed. I was just like, I actually felt like really sad. I was like, oh man, he was like my favorite character, and like seeing him come to this.
Now he's just a zombie guy. Sorry. Yeah,
exactly. I was just like, oh, it was tough.
I get it. I get it. There's enough goofy characters. We get plenty. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was just like, they don't need Roche anymore. I understand.
We've replaced him. Sorry.
Yeah.
Hope you like those couple fights. Yeah. So we're heading out. Our ship breaks. This is where, like, I realized how insane this world was when you could start driving the boat. Like, this place is big. Like, all the open worlds themselves are. Yeah, and that's what where it's like, no, we can actually, like, just... I feel like you could wander from one end of the map to the other.
Yeah. Very doable. Can. I mean, I did the thing. I mean, I because I've been cleaning up and, like, driving around. It's like, oh, no, you can actually go from this point over to this point. It's really impressive, but also at the same time... that boat section is like so short and not like necessary.
Yeah.
I was like, why do you actually need to have it so interconnected? I don't think you guys had to do that. But they did.
It's a tech thing. You gotta show off. You gotta show off a little bit. We had our little Midgar game and now we gotta show off how big this planet is.
Yeah. I know we're not talking side missions yet, but this had the best side missions because it opens up a bunch of like new side missions that do a lot of really cool stuff as now I'm cleaning it up of like bringing back characters from Remake, having some cool final closure with some of the characters you met in Rebirth. That whole part is cool. I love driving the ship. It's just a fun thing to drive on. It's just like so surprising. It's like, oh, that's actually controls really nice. In our notes, I have Hydro Thunder in exclamation points because I really like Hydro Thunder. And I played a control suspiciously similar to Hydro Thunder, which I really liked. Yeah.
So on our boat, we get back to Golden Saucer.
Yep.
It's date night.
Yep. I love this part.
Okay. So let's start with this. Your date was, I believe, Aerith, correct?
Aerith, yes. I had done all these side missions. I had this really sweet moment with Aerith. It was beautiful. And you did.
Kate Sith, Vincent, and Sid.
That's so funny. I like literally don't even know how you did that. That's so funny.
I don't either. I did like enough side quests, I felt like. But what I realized as I was cleaning up was like, I don't think I ever did like the character specific ones. Like, this is a Tifa side quest. This is a Red 13 side quest. I did a bunch of the like just generic ones. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of just like world exploring and proto relic stuff. So I think that's why I got the very generic one. But I loved it. It was great. It was a fun night out. It was played so goofy and it just fit this game. And I think I almost, and again, I think I went on YouTube, like, I don't remember if it was Tifa or Aerith or both or one. I went through and like watched.
Like they're like real. And Aerith, they hold hands, but she talks about Zach the whole time. I'm like, this girl's a downer.
But that's funny. I went and watched them.
The whole time.
And in my mind at this point, like, we're getting a lot of like evil Cloud by this point.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of like one of those things where it's like, a date almost feels out of context with how like weirdly evil Cloud is. So it's like,
fair.
Yeah, Kate, Vincent, and Sid just kind of going like, come on, bud, let's go have some fun. Like, it's been a rough couple weeks. Let's go ride.
Yeah.
They say couples on the Ferris wheel, but let's go. Come on, man. Let's just go have a fun on the Ferris wheel. Let's go. I think the line is like, what's wrong with a few of the boys going to see a musical? I think it's like literally the, the line when they knock on your door.
Yeah, because I did Aerith. There's like a very, very sweet scene. It is a little bit weird because she's still hung up on Zach the whole time and talks about Zach a lot during it. But it's like, it's still cute that like in my version, like they canonically were, the most dramatic thing they do is like they intertwine fingers and like they hold hands. It's like very high school-y, but it was like a cute moment. the Loveless play, though, I thought that was so cool. I love how that was just like a different gameplay thing entirely.
Yeah.
And was so cool.
It was weird. Again, it's just another one of those weird things that keeps popping up. Like, I think at this point in the game, it's like you're kind of trained to expect anything.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of just the next anything there. It was really kind of crazy. I don't know. I felt like emotionally manipulated because it's like, we're just using her in this. So you're like, oh, man, like, I miss her. Like, she was so great in Remake. And it's like, yeah, well, she's not really here.
Oh, you know, we'll talk about side stuff. We'll have to talk side stuff.
Yeah, do it.
So. There's a side mission you do in Cosmo Canyon where it shows you flashbacks to the Avalanche gang just hanging out, like, well before, I think mm-hmm. before even Cloud meets them, and they're getting drunk at a bar. And you see Jesse, and they have a bunch of new scenes with all the four or five original Avalanche members just hanging out. It's like, it's this really, really sweet scene. It's really nice. And then you find out that she's just been turned into this character in this play, and she's not there anymore, and she's just kind of like this, like, like, not like a husk, but to me it was like this like very deeply sad kind of dark scene where like they still used her image for it because she was the face of it. Like, let's just keep using her image. So it was kind of neat in that sort of like grimy Las Vegas way to me of where it's like, you know, it just seems really disrespectful. And that's what I took away from
fun.
It. It was like really disrespectful to her. It's like, it's an emotional scene, but it felt like weirdly disrespectful to the character in like an interesting kind of cool way. So that's what I got away. That's what I got from like, they are still using Jesse's face, even though she died for that scene. I was like, oh, that's cool. That just makes this whole thing feel just a little grimy, which I like.
I can see that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Weird gameplay, weird fun. Again, another weird fun scene, I think. Again, you kept talking like towards the beginning, it's not something I don't see another AAA game doing. I don't see another AAA game doing this.
And they go bonkers with the fight choreography, like absolutely
it's very
like
cool.
Advent Children levels. It's really neat. Yeah. Yeah. But no, that whole scene was cool. I just wasn't expecting when they were like all in full regalia, and then it's like gives you like, are you going to follow fate or whatever? And they're all calling each other by their stage names. I was like, this is just awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is everybody dressed up. Very cool.
Yeah.
We get to the Colosseum.
Yep.
I don't know how I feel about him coming back because I just kind of fell out of nowhere, but Don Guarnero comes in to like the greatest like WrestleMania-esque intro in the history of anything, and it's so well done. It's one of those things where it's like, this should feel stupid and dumb and cheesy, and it felt awesome.
Well, Corneo, I don't give a shit about it. His two crony guys are great, and they were going to remake. They're awesome here.
Yes.
This is like one of those things like, oh, the writing is good. Because like, it's like, oh, God, they're going to rap. And then they started rapping. I was like, this is actually not bad.
This isn't bad. this is acceptable.
This is acceptable. Like, I'm not like cringing. It's like, oh, no, they're playing into it. It's funny, but it's actually like pretty well executed. I was very surprised by that. But I do like that it's like they had the Corneo cronies and like Dio kind of group coming in. That was super fun. I think Corneo himself being there was kind of dumb. But just like,
I agree.
Just the pomp and circumstance sort of thing was just like really cool.
Yep. The Rufus fight. This was a turn off the game one night for me where I was like, I tried like five times. Like, it's not happening. I'm done with this thing. I hate it. I'm done. I played on normal, and this was like, is there a freaking easy mode moment for me?
Yeah, I I need to figure out how that, because there was a trick to it in Remake, and I could not figure out the trick here. I think my trick was just, like, save up all my supers and stuff, because when he gets that second form, I'm just fucked. So just, like, summons, limits, blah, 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 everything. Just don't let him do anything.
Yeah. And actually, it was funny, because I actually just replayed Remake, like, back in January.
Yeah.
And that was the one part going on, like, New Game Plus that actually slowed me down was this fight, and it's, like, set up the exact same way. And I just, I got to it, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, it's a tough fight.
Do not enjoy it. We get the Kate Sith double cross.
I forgot. I kind of forgot about this scene, like, in the original game. It was a tough scene. I was like pretty shocked.
Yeah, I think it was, I again forgot about it too, and it's just like, oh okay, like, you were so friendly and nice and like you helped us. And I mean, you kind of get when he comes back, they're like, okay, like he did it for the right reasons. Like he was trying to help us. He thought like, you don't need to get messed up in this. It's fine. Just let it be. Like, definitely have the right intentions there, but
yeah,
not so much.
Yeah. I remember being disappointed in Kate Sith. I was just like, oh man, dude, we were bros. And like the whole team's like, we were bros.
Yeah. What are you doing to us? Yeah. And just, again, another one of those good emotional moments where it's like, this hurt them. You could tell, you could feel that, like, this hurt them in the moment of like seeing that happen.
And I think even as a player, it's like going through all those like really hard boss battles only to lose the prize too. Like, as a player, you're like, fuck you, man.
Lost that. You're not in my party anymore. So all that time learning your systems is gone. It's like
you were so fun to play too, man.
Yeah. So we get our point of no return. It's time to go north to the temple.
5 hours left of the game.
Yeah. Gotta love that. The temple itself is just kind of weird, crazy level design. It felt very PS2 era. It almost felt like something out of SMT with some of the weird like floaties and turning gravity. And was not my favorite dungeon by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And I think it had like cool moments in it that I think we'll be talking about in a moment. Like, but there was like cool story stuff that's like, man, you could have explained this a little bit earlier. That would have been really neat instead of having like 5-10 major plot points happening in the course of like 4 hours.
Yeah.
One like neat detail I thought was they do a sort of like hologram projection of what happened to the ancients and stuff and fighting Jenova. And the thing I really liked about that scene is that it's the same story that's in Loveless, but Loveless is told from the human perspective, so now you see it from the ancients' perspective, that I thought was just like really cool. And I love that they have like a narrator over it and everything. It's like a really kind of cool thing. And then you're just in like PS2 dungeons for like another hour, like, and then you fight a cool red dragon that was like really cool.
Yep.
I really like the scene though where Aerith does the she does the Yuna dance. There's always these sort of like loose ties to Final Fantasy X and VII specifically. There are characters that do cross in some ways. And it was like, I really, really love that scene because it's just a really cool scene of her like becoming in tune with the planet, and it's very reminiscent of Yuna's dance scene as well. It's like, it's just like, oh, I love that stuff. Like when Final Fantasy knows what is a good thing to pull in.
Where's our references coming from and how are we using them? Yep. And we're not going to they don't overdo it, which I think is always the great thing, where it's like, it's always those subtle casual nods to things where it's like, that was what Yuna, that's exactly what Yuna did. And now we're getting it here.
And it's neat that they're like, it's referencing forward, like 7 referencing 10 forward is like, that's really cool. That's really neat that they could do, because it wasn't around.
Get a lot of Cloud and Sephiroth stuff happening here. I did, again, that evil Cloud stuff still hanging in the back of my mind here with him and Sephiroth keep repeating the same, like, it's not a death, it's a homecoming line. I thought that was kind of just like, they foreshadow a lot of this, like, what are we doing with Cloud? What's happening with Cloud? And I think that's just kind of this cool, like, blend of like, okay, like something major is happening here with these two.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was full blown Cloud's becoming the villain, and that's going to be freaking awesome. To the point where like him not becoming it was almost weird.
Disappointing. Although, was disappointing.
I mean, we'll talk about it. Like the final cutscene kind of maybe still alludes to it, but how about those flashbacks though?
Those are very cool. I thought
those were so good.
I was a little nervous. I was like, oh man, are we going to do like 7 character specific dungeons here?
Yeah. Oh, that's what I thought. I think I texted you. I was like, oh, cool, individual dungeons. But I was like, oh no, 6 individual dungeons.
Yeah. Because that was my thought at first. I was like, oh, and then you kind of get going like, oh no, we're going to do all. And then, but I like the way that we handled it instead, where it's just all these very character specific moments of just seeing things. from their perspective, these moments that you kind of know happen, but we really get some deepness into what's going on there, just these moments that truly affected him. I really liked Red's, like, God, seeing
the,
him,
gameplay,
like,
the R2-L2 stuff.
Seeing him, like,
really
getting
good.
Dragged in there was just really intense.
They do an interesting thing with the R2-L2 prompts in general, where it's always for very critical scenes. So I like that anytime you're using the L2, R2 back and forth, it's some, like, really intense scene. That is, I like that kind of going to, like,
that
QTE specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's never, you never do that, like, any of the fun, goofy stuff. It's always the, like, Nibelheim is burning to the ground.
You're crawling forward. You're Red 13 trying to pull on the chains and not get, because he gets branded and then gets the Red 13 tattoo. It's just like, oh, man.
We see
the Barrett stuff was crazy.
I was gonna say the Barrett stuff, seeing more of that town, I think was just really interesting, especially with just how impactful that scene was to me earlier in the game. You see his
wife or somebody?
I think or wife or fiance, girlfriend, something in that vein.
I thought that to me was so crazy because they introduced a character they never talked about or mentioned.
Yep.
Barrett never mentions her.
No.
And I think that's really cool as a, this is what happened to Barrett, and he specifically never mentions her.
Well, and especially cool. with kind of the details with Marlene of like, no, Marlene's not his kid. And it's like, oh, but like he had this family still. Cause you kind of get this like, oh, Barrett was this solo like guy who's just fighting with his friends who got like this kid stuck on him. And now you're like, oh, no. Like there was more even, there's even still another layer down on Barrett there that we're seeing when we're meeting this person.
Why do you have Yuffie Integrate crap written on her thing? I like that stuff. I thought that was
because I couldn't remember what it was. It was one of those where it's like, I don't remember much of what happened in Integrate.
That's fair. That is fair. It is weird that the Integrate stuff does not come up at all, except for the end of a 60-hour game.
I think that's why it was, because I was literally like, I went through and I read it before I started playing. It's like, I need to have that because it's going to come up. It's a major point. And then like a week and a half later, I'm at this scene. It's like, oh crap, this is that stupid Integrate stuff. Like, damn it.
Yeah, there's like a whole cast of characters they don't talk about. It's really, very strange.
That Yuffie knows all about and did all this stuff with and was in Midgar and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But Aerith's mom dying, I thought was really kind of crazy with her kind of wandering around, getting introduced to her adoptive mom. That was a really intense scene. You kind of see Cloud surrounded by the flames as Jesse's dying. Just good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff in there.
Very good.
I think when I don't remember Aerith's speech, but Aerith gives this big speech to the group of like, we need to keep going. And I don't remember the speech at all, but the immediate aftermath is Cloud literally standing up and going, are you done now? Let's get moving. And it's just, I've said it a couple times. I love the Cloud like heel turn that this is attempting to make and hopefully making. And just, I think that kind of just hurt by the end because it's like, you've got murdery, angry, evil Cloud who's like, this incredible speech, like, we're got it. And you're like, as the player, you're sitting there like, oh, this is a whole, we're getting in the end stretch. Let's go. Oh, yeah. We got to do this. We got to save the planet. We got to stop Sephiroth. I was like, shut the fuck up.
It's crazy. Cause then, and also he kills one of the other guys. It's like really intense and violent. And it's just like, I do like that they very specific, like, it's very clear that they're doing it, that he's doing like Sephiroth's kills and animations and stuff. And it's just like, and you see so many times when the six soldiers get taken over by Sephiroth very easily. And it's just like, well, that's coming for him. And it's like, he's in it now sort of thing. It's just, it's crazy. Yeah.
And then we get the redemption for Cat Sith saving
the
everything
materia and all that stuff. Yeah.
I was really excited that he came back and died.
Yeah.
And then when he showed back up, I was like, God damn it. Like, it was just one of those, like, you can have characters come back, but like, if you're going to kill him, like at least let it sit for more than 4 minutes. Like,
do you see what I wrote on our notes? Chewbacca. Yeah. Because in the Jedi movie, they kill Chewbacca and they let you sit out for a whole 3 seconds. Like, nope, Chewbacca wasn't in that one. It was a different one. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was curious why you put that in there. It's like you do the temple running out scene and then he's just like, oh, yeah, no, it's all good, guys. Yeah. Good. I mean, and they shoot the scene really well because it's like it zooms in on it and you see it falling and he's doing the like, you gotta go. Like, and it's such a well done scene.
And Cloud grab the back black materia and they're trying to put it back and like fighting him over the materia.
It's so well done. Then just like, what's up, guys? Did something happen?
Yes, you're dead. Seven, but I don't know if it was that fast. It was just like,
it was so quick.
Yeah.
I think at this point, we need to just say, I'm going to straight up say, this is all just where my mind lost it. I'm like, I don't know what happens. I couldn't tell you. And maybe it's my dislike of the Zach part, but this is where things just went all the hell in my brain. Of like, I don't know what's real anymore.
I mean, there's some cool stuff like Sephiroth already having the black materia and then giving it to Cloud to hand to him was like really cool.
Yes, the scene of him, the scene of him, Aerith, and Cloud on there where Cloud's chasing her down, so intense. So,
oh yeah, he's like, come here, Aerith. It's like, I won't hurt you, I promise. You're like, he's gonna fucking murder her.
So bad. Yep.
Yeah, and I like that you're playing it from his perspective, because they could easily put it down from Aerith's perspective. It was neat. Yeah.
Yeah, and then,
I could talk about this a little bit if you want, like, for what I think is going on, all that stuff.
Yeah, go for it. Throw your theories out there, because, again, my big thing is, like, and it's almost the same thing with the Kate Sith thing, where it's like, we killed Aerith, right? But then Aerith still kind of, I hate the fake-outs that this is doing with the other world and all that stuff. So you can go, because this is where I'm like, I liked it, I enjoyed it, but I'm just like, just give me a straight answer.
So, I mean, okay, so what happens is they fall into the back in the Temple of Ancients. He does grab her and they fall down. And then they have like a date. And the date
in Zach's world.
Well, not in a world. It's not Zach's world. It's a different one. And the way they indicate that is with the stamps, the stamp the dog. There's like four or five different stamp the dogs throughout. So there'll be scenes where they're showing Zach making decisions. There's a decision where he can go save Cloud. Heal Cloud or go to Biggs.
Yeah,
and you see both versions of the story.
And one fades away after he goes to the, it's tunnels and he goes to the right and the other one fades away.
Yes, and Biggs is eating a bag of potato chips with a stamp that's a pug versus, there's like five or six different stamps. Yeah. So what they're showing you is basically all of the different decisions is creating these sort of like, you know, it's like Loki. It's like creating all these different decisions or whatever else, multiverse sort of thing.
Pick your one of the dozen at this point.
Yeah. So anytime the screen fades, like the screen actually does like this fade to white, is that it's like going to a different universe. So Aerith pulls Cloud some way into a universe where it's ending. It's one of the kind of like those fragile universes that's going to end. And everybody's like, okay with it ending. It's very sweet. They have it. And that's why they're having a date and they're going around and everybody's giving stuff away for free because they all know they're going to die in the next like few days or whatever. So it's a very sweet scene. And I loved how it ended because Aerith can hear Sephiroth. She knows Sephiroth is nearby and that she's about to get killed by Sephiroth. So she gives him her version of the white material in that universe. And as she's pushing him in, you see Sephiroth coming through the church doors. And there's like the one time they actually had like a real date, like a for real date.
Yeah.
And I just really liked how sweet that was and how dark it was of just like Sephiroth like killing her. Well, like she knew that she was gonna die in that moment. So it was interesting kind of seeing the different, well, multiverses or whatever, of all those. It was a little confusing how Aerith is somehow able to go between them. I don't understand how that works.
I think that's where my issue with this stuff lies, is I don't understand
like what the rules are.
I don't understand what the rules are. I don't understand who, because she clearly can go between them, and sometimes it's death that does things and sometimes it's not. It's just I need rules. Give me rules.
And I think this to me kind of reminds me of like Kingdom Hearts, both positively and negatively, because I think it feels like, you know what, I'm just going to go along for the ride and this will just be neat stuff to set up, like a cool Zach, bringing Zach at a moment, bringing Aerith being alive or whatever. I do think they really fucked up the Aerith being killed moment, though.
So bad.
It's super sick when he stops Sephiroth.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, fuck, he stopped Sephiroth from killing Aerith. But then they immediately swap to the universe where she's dead. And then they have, again, like you're saying, they haven't established the rules of how this works. But like, it's clearly like kind of like a split point where like he did save her, he didn't save her sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And the world that you're in is the one where he did not save her. But they do show you the world where he did save her. So there's parts where he's talking to her somehow at the same time in both those timelines. I mean, it was cool. It was interesting. But again, it's like when he stabbed Tifa, they had to have this like moment. Is the same thing with like the Aerith getting killed.
And it's just, it takes like that scene that is so iconic to so many people, and it just like, it messes with it for no reason. It's just like, in my mind, I'm just picturing like Darth Vader standing there and Cloud City going like, Luke, I'm your father, uncle, brother. Like, you know,
like we haven't established a familiar relationship.
I didn't see the family tree yet. Like, yeah. it just takes that moment. It took all the power out of it. Cause it's just like, instead of it being the sacrifice, this moment of like determination for our heroes moving forward, it's just like, I think she did. And then, of course, you see, later on, okay, there's, like, the moments, like, as they're leaving, like, this area where, like, they're really having this moment, like, oh, no, she's dead for everybody but Cloud, because now Cloud can... And again, it's just the rules. It's the rules, man. The rules got me.
Yeah, and it's unclear to me, it's like, well, how can he see her in a different universe? Is that actually what he's seeing? I did like that the final cutscene, though, is he pulls out he has the black materia for some reason. Mm-hmm. He's kind of quietly puts it in his sword and doesn't tell the group.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really slick. I think they are going to still kind of lean into it. How'd you like the full final boss? It says here too long. But I did like that. I thought it was cool.
I think that you're calling me out on all my notes now. I liked it. It was very cool. I thought it was great. I love the splitting the party up. And every member of the party had a job to do. Like Cloud and Zach are clearly our focal point here. But there's a side area where these two got to do this, and we got to break this part. And I like that concept of this larger than life boss needing to be broken up into chunks versus like. Normally she's like, oh no, like we're all standing in front of it and hit the head a bunch of times and oh, now hit the arm a bunch of times. Like, no, like you guys get that. It felt strategic in a way that wasn't necessarily defined.
I just realized that the fight where you're fighting a falling Genova is the reverse of the Advent children throwing them up to hit Bahamut.
Oh, yeah.
They're doing the same thing, but they're doing it in reverse as they're falling down to get Genova. It's like, because that whole scene is just like, a power of friendship out the wazoo, which I always like.
Oh, yeah.
Power of friendship stuff. All I think that stuff's great.
And like they're we both unabashedly love Kingdom Hearts. So yes, power of friendship. Like
as long as it releases the hype moments, I don't give a shit, man. That was just, that was so cool. That whole like team up beat up, and like the fight was really. And I did like that it ended with just Cloud, Aerith, and Sephiroth as that sort of like final kind of like
here's our that main felt character really good.
Sort of thing. I died a lot on that fight. It was really, really hard. I liked how hard it was on hard. It was like a really tough fight. I was just like, that was another like, do I need to turn the difficulty down moments? But I really liked how, I liked that fight, just how design and stuff was like all just like really, really well done.
Yeah. Looked very cool.
Yeah.
And then we're done. That's the game.
That is the game.
Summed up in an hour and 20 minutes. This is our longest episode ever by like double.
I really enjoyed it. I think I was like totally on board and really loved the game. I think the finale I think the game's always trying to be too confusing for its own good, which always screwed up, and they always did after a major moment. It's like, oh man, dude, just like let that part where he stabbed Tifa sit the rest of the party like rescue her, and they're like, what the fuck just happened? But no, like we have to have this whole other thing. Same thing with Aerith getting killed. But just there's a lot of cool I just think how all the characters interacted and reacted to all these scenes was awesome.
I enjoyed it. I think to me it's a game of great little moments. I think the game as a whole package I don't think is, it's great. Like, I mean, I love the game. I don't think it's as strong as like a total package, but I think if you look at, oh man, the Golden Saucer. Oh man, like what's happening in Junon. Like those little areas I think are just incredible. The character moments, like dying that moment. Those moments are, you know, just insane and powerful. As a whole contextual piece, it very much just had this like, it didn't need to be this confusing. It doesn't have to be this confusing. We didn't need all this extra stuff. The game, I think the story of Seven would hold up well now as it was without the need to throw in the trendy multiverse thing coming from somebody who loves Marvel. But I mean, it doesn't feel necessary in the story. And I think that's where it just kind of was like, you kind of backed yourself into a corner and remake of like, oh no, we're going to try something different. And I was like, we got to follow that through now.
I kind of felt like when they killed Fate, there could have been other cool repercussions of that weren't multiverse. You know what I mean? I think that was their excuse, which was, it was an interesting excuse. They killed Fate, so now the timeline's all fucked up because nobody's being guided by Fate anymore. So now, you know, whoever lives and who dies, and it's all changing all the time because Fate doesn't. It's like, that's interesting. It doesn't necessarily have to, but you're right. It's another multiverse story. It's like, okay. but yeah, I think it had a lot of cool moments.
All right, so now that we wrapped up the story, we kept saying we're going to get to side stuff, but this is very long, substantially longer than we thought. And yeah, we are old people who have kids and need to go to bed. So we're going to break this into two parts. Coming soon, part two, we're going to walk through all the side stuff because Doug, I think, invested more time into the side stuff than the main story at this point.
Heck yeah.
And it might give you a little bit of time to mop up the last little bits. But we'll get into the side stuff and then get into ultimately our thoughts for where part three will be going. So look for that. We are Workforce Gaming. You can subscribe to our channel. Leave a comment below. There's a link to support us on Ko-fi as well. We'll see you later.
Bye.